BootlaNetwork.com, episode 181. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio, kids. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Episode 181. Hard to believe. And we've got countless, unnumbered special episodes, so I'm sure we're well past 200 by now. Hey, my wife and I. Yes, we're still married. Our son was born in the hottest summer on record. And today is August the 17th, 2013. It was 33 years ago today. It's a personal story today on Bootla Network, and I'll tell you about it next. If you're a first-time listener, I'll go ahead and warn you. This is going to be personal, and you may not want to tune in. And if you don't, I'm cool with that. Perfectly okay. Here we are about building business. And the premise is, it's pretty straightforward. I've been in sales, marketing, business building my entire life. And I believe it really boils down to, if we can tell a better story, if we can craft a better story, and I don't mean lying, I mean just telling compelling stories, then we can improve our business. And that pretty much is at the heart of what goes on here. So if that is your interest, and I hope that it is, then I hope you'll tune in perhaps to a later episode. But today is my son, my only son's 33rd birthday. And so this is going to be an episode primarily about him. It was August, obviously. The year was 1980. Now, I don't know where you're listening from. You may not even be listening from the United States of America, but here in this part of the country, in Dallas, Texas, and all across North Texas and Oklahoma, that year, the summer of 1980, 42 straight days of triple-digit heat. Now, it doesn't matter that we did not live in Dallas 33 years ago. We were in Oklahoma at the time, but it was no cooler up north. Up north meaning just one state north. I mean, records were set all across this part of America in the summer of 1980, the summer that my son was born. Rhonda and I, my wife, obviously, had been married since January the 2nd, 1978. We were young, very much in love. We still are. And almost 2 years after our wedding, we found out we were pregnant. And I will tell you straight up, I was completely unprepared. And the fear of unpreparedness, guys, is a special kind of fear. And maybe you know what this is like. Steve Farber calls it OSM. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you what that stands for. There's a reason, by the way, that he was the first. I think he was the first person. If he wasn't, he was certainly right up at the top. But I think Steve Farber was probably the first person I followed when I jumped on Twitter some years ago. There's a link in the show notes to Mr. Farber's website. He used to be the president of Tom Peters Companies and branched off on his own and wrote some pretty terrific books. And anyway, he calls this special kind of fear that I allude to OSM. And he describes the OSM as the feeling a ski jumper gets as he attempts his very first jump. Now, I've never done that. I've never done a ski jump. Have no desire to do a ski jump, but I was once a first-time dad. And I can't imagine anything scarier. a little bit like Red Foreman chastening his son, Eric, for flirting with his female cousin. You may not remember that episode, but it's terrific. He had a really attractive teenage cousin, a young lady, and Eric, he took a liking to her, and Foreman, Red, the father, dressed him down one day, fearful that they would have web-footed children or some other freakish things because they were cousins. And I was honestly worried. As a young father, as a young expectant father, I was honestly worried about the physical well-being of my baby and my wife. I don't remember being fearful of much else. I'm rather certain I was, and I'm rather certain that I was probably fearful, as most young fathers are, about money. I mean, who isn't? Every doctor visit made me just a little bit more easy that, okay, things are progressing. Things are going well with this pregnancy. You know, Rhonda's doing well. The baby seems to be fine. But boy, during the rest of the winter and into the spring, yes, things were going very well. But then summer hit. And then that heat came rolling in, much stronger than normal, by the way. And around here, normal summer and normal summer heat, they're hot. I mean, real hot. You know, people back east and people up north say, man, it's hot today. Man, we're up into the 90s. I've even heard people say, man, it's hot up here. You know, we're it's 85 degrees here today. Now, in Texas and Oklahoma, we laugh because for us, that's a cold front. It's absolutely a cold front in the summer for us. If we're into the 90s or the 80s, I mean, we commonly say it because it's true. It's 105 in the shade. And if you're in West Texas, well, there is no shade. Man, you just have to pity the poor people in West Texas. It takes a special breed of cat. Well, it takes horny toads and lizards and reptiles to live out there. But in the summer of 1980, the heat, it was unbearable. I mean, it was unbearable even in the shade. Nothing around here was green except our envy for some cooler climate. Rhonda was entering the ninth month of her pregnancy, and I don't know of a word in the human English language that properly can describe it, because miserable doesn't quite properly catch it. Her ankles were swollen. Her feet were swollen. Her fingers were swollen. So much so that I had to get wire cutters one night. I had to get these side cutters, and I had to cut off her wedding ring. We had tried every way possible to get this thing off. Unfortunately, she had left it on too long, and when the swelling began in her fingers, it's all she wrote. And I thought, you know, you're going to lose a finger if we don't cut this ring off. And so I did. Then the pains began. It was on a Saturday in August of 1980, and we drove to the hospital, and my fear of webbed feet was really amping up about now. But it was really even different than that, because at this point now I'm thinking, you know, hey, if this child comes out with webbed feet, I'll be happy. You know, can we just get this child here safely. I was worried about a lot more, and I really can't explain, even after all these years of perspective, I can't explain why. There wasn't necessarily any logical reason for it other than I was a novice dad and I just didn't have a clue. I mean, I had not a clue about any of these things. For thousands of years, women have given birth to children in circumstances far less favorable than the one we were in, you know, in a hospital. But I was fearful for my wife's life. I was fearful for this newborn baby. Shoot, I feared for my own life at this point, because as far as I could tell, I just didn't see any way that any of us were going to get out of this thing alive. Then the pain and the vomiting began. No, not my own, although I admittedly, I felt like vomiting. But Rhonda, you know, got very sick. I never saw it, but back in high school, I remember kids describing Linda Blair's performance in that movie, The Exorcist. And of course, you know, we all, for whatever reason, we all bought the soundtrack to the stupid thing, you know, that, Oldfield seems like did the music for that thing. And I had heard all these stories describing her performance. And so at any point in this pain and vomiting, I fully expected Rhonda to just sit up in bed and turn her head completely around as these kids had described to me, and maybe even just kill me with fire that would shoot from her eyeballs. I hadn't seen anything like it. I'd play football, and I had seen and heard, and really seeing's not the deal. Hearing is the deal. Hearing knees torn. But I'd never seen this level of pain before. I was reading something about a horse jockey talking about the sound that you hear when a horse breaks a leg in a race, and just, you know, how awful that sound is. Well, I had never seen this level of pain before. I had never heard this level of pain before. And frankly, I had never felt this level of helplessness either. You know, so there I was, the dutiful klutz, keeping a cold wash rag on my wife's forehead. Boy, there's a remedy, right, for inscrutable pain, a cold wash rag. Well, here, we'll fix you right up. You know, you're throwing up and you're writhing in pain, but a cold wash rag on your head. Yeah, that'll do the trick. Hey, it's the best I could do. Well, that and hold that stupid little hospital. You've seen these hospital, this one was blue. I've seen them in pink too. They're, it's in that Pepto-Bismol pink, or that kind of hospital blue plastic barf container, you know, the kind that's shaped to curve around the side of your face. And it's not the color or the shape that fails so much. It's just, it's the capacity of the thing. It's kind of the size of the thing. And it's the fact that it's open. And so it exposes that bile that is coming from this exorcism, well, or the birthing of a child. And they may be one and the same. I'm not sure. So the hours roll on and they roll on and they roll on. And Rhonda's refusing pain medicine, right? Because she wants to have this quote unquote natural childbirth. And I'm like, you know, forget that, you know, and of course there's no reasoning. There's no reasoning with a woman in labor pain. I can tell you that it was a decision that we were both regretting with every passing hour, but she stayed the course. And so the hours clicked by. Have you seen those vehicles? This is what I thought of when I was thinking about this. Those vehicles that will transport, I remember seeing them as a kid, that would transport the Apollo missions to the launch pad. I mean, they were these huge, ginormous machines, and it would take a number of days to move. I don't know how far it was. It may have been a couple of miles, because these machines would move this entire rocket inches, just inches, like every hour or something. Well, that was the pace. The clock on the wall was moving with that kind of speed for me. And of course, the question that was always on my mind is, well, you know, I mean, how long can this go on? And of course, by now, Rhonda was just completely out of her mind. Guys, if you're not yet a father, let me explain something to you. When your wife exhorts you to enter the delivery room with her, decline, refuse. I did. Now, my wife didn't exhort me to go into the delivery room. That it was understood from day one, I'm not going to be there. And it was understood from day one, she didn't necessarily want me there. She had enough sense to not care. She didn't want me holding this cold wash rag on her forehead at this point. I mean, she likely just wanted me out of the room. Hey, for all I know, she wanted me out of her life at this point. But that clock just continued to click and click and eventually it was time. And so they rush her back to the delivery room, and we were into hour 17 of labor, hard labor. Yeah, like prison camp, hard labor. I went to the waiting room to just chew what was left of my fingernails. Chronic fingernail biter. Well, the fingernails, they, you know, I don't know. They probably had all been bitten off in hour one. And so by the time I get to hour 17, I'm, you know, now I'm working on cuticles. Well, next stop, bone. You don't likely remember Hoyt Axton, and it's a shame. It's a shame that you don't, and it's a shame that we lost him too soon. Hoyt Axton was a guy that, he was a singer-songwriter, country-ish. Jeremiah was a bullfrog, the Three Dog Night hit. He wrote that. But he had written a song about working your fingers to the bone, and the lyric was, you know, work your fingers to the bone, what do you get? Bony fingers. I think I'll put a link to that too. You need to, it's a YouTube video that's just got the music, but you need to hear it. Hoyt Axton, Bony Fingers. Well, it was clear I was going to chew mine to the bone. So early Sunday morning, August 17th, 1980. And I may be off on this. I should have asked my wife, but I didn't. I wanted to do this from my own memory. Somewhere around 6 a.m. Like I said, maybe I'm off, but that's the best I can remember given my state of petrification. All of a sudden, just like that, we were no longer a couple. All of a sudden, just like that, we were now three. All of a sudden, just like that, I was a dad. All of a sudden, just like that, we had a son. And I only thought I was out of the woods when I heard he had arrived and all was well with mom and child. And then I saw him. I'm supposing a nurse, I don't remember, a nurse or somebody strolled by, and he was in this, you know, he was in the newborn hopper, you know, that they have them in. And they carted past, and I saw this little thing that was red as a beet, but that the redness wasn't the surprising thing. I looked at this thing and realized I'm the father of a conehead. I am the father of a beet red conehead. I had no idea a human could survive in such a state, but there he was. There he was, my son, the red conehead. And I wasn't ashamed. It wasn't that. I was just too astonished to feel anything other than relief that this nightmare was now over. Months of torturous weather. I mean, come on, we had endured the spring tornado season here in Tornado Alley. And then weeks and weeks of, man, will this ever end, summer heat? And now I've got this child, a son. Well, he'll never be able to play any sport that requires a helmet because he's a conehead. And of course, little did I know, his head would take on this normal shape. And I didn't know how long that would take. It's amazing to me that both his skull's ability to morph and my ability to be that clueless. But hey, there we were, summer of 1980. I said it then, and I've said it since, but it bears repeating. I had never loved my wife more than at that very moment prior. And I can't fully explain that. Now, maybe there are other dads out there who can understand it, and maybe you can explain it, but even still, after 33 years, I can't. But I do suspect that the dads out there that you can understand it, and I rather suspect that there are many of you, maybe all of you, who felt that way. The pain, the suffering, the sacrifice, the months of travail, followed by hours and hours of pain strong enough to make you puke. You know, it humbled me. It may have humbled me like, well, it absolutely humbled me like nothing ever had before. And I can't think of anything that has really come close since. I mean, I was reduced to this small, insignificant puddle of muddy water on the floor. We named him Ryan, R-Y-A-N. And after a few hours, I went home, I cleaned up, and I dressed for Sunday morning worship. At church, I'm sure folks congratulated me, but I'm going to confess, I don't remember anything about worship that Sunday morning other than the fact that I went. I was mentally and emotionally spent, and with each passing moment, I was just feeling more helpless, and I was completely unprepared to begin this journey as a father. I mean, shoot, I didn't feel grown up enough yet myself. But there he was, a son, born to a 23-year-old version of me and a 23-year-old version of my wife. And so here we are today on August the 17th, 2013, 33 years later, standing tall as proof that idiots can raise wise children. He's a middle school assistant principal today. He's got incredible street smarts. He's ambitious. And honestly, he has some skills that I can't imagine possessing. Oh, and he has a family of his own. I mean, 33 years ago, I thought we were all just going to have to go straight back to Remulac. You know, that was the planet that the Coneheads were from. But instead, we wound up here. We wound up in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. All of us, by the way. Within a couple of years, his sister would arrive on the planet. We named her Renee. Yeah, go figure. Randy, Rhonda, Ryan, Renee. Yeah, we kept it in the family of ours. Yes, that was very intentional. You know, that was just the beginning of the story, but for now, it's probably all that you need to know. It may be more than you want to know. There is so much more to tell. Like how bad his temper was and still is when he loses at sports. You know, we like to focus on how competitive he is, and he is. I could tell you the stories of the Little League baseball games where, you know, upon striking out, it was just, you might as well, like a golfer would yell four, you just had to yell duck because the bat was going to be whirly bird. I mean, it was coming out of his hands, you know, just outraged that he had struck out. I could tell you about how badly I felt and still do when we were visiting a neighborhood basketball court and I had this, I don't know why, but I had this wet towel draped around my neck. It's probably to keep us cool in the summer. And we were just horse playing around and you know how you pop people with a towel. Oh man, I caught him. Well, it worked better than it should have. You know, I couldn't have done it again. I could have tried a million times and I wouldn't have done it that well. First time, pow. And it laid a welt on his leg and I felt horrible. I still do. I still feel badly about it. I could tell you about how sad I was to sit with him as a small child at the front entry of our house in Oklahoma when we closed the door and we headed to Dallas, Texas. And it wasn't that I didn't want to come to Dallas, Texas. It was just, you know, this was a place that I had been longer at that point than any place I'd ever been in my life. And it was home. And it was really the only house that he knew. And kind of a sad moment. I could talk about how I love to watch him skate still. And it doesn't matter if it's ice hockey or roller hockey, doesn't matter to me, just watching him skate. And I can recognize his stride. I don't care. You could throw a bunch of people out on an ice rink or a roller hockey rink. And it will not take me long to spot him, even if there's no names or numbers on the back of the jerseys. I could talk about how the, years we spent together involved in hockey. Me coaching him, him helping me coach little kids. I could certainly include a 4-year stint of coaching the roller hockey team at the University of Texas at Arlington and our 4 consecutive regional championships and the national tournaments that we competed at, and what great fun that was. Maybe I could talk about, you know, how amazed Rhonda and I were to get him out of college successfully with a degree. Yeah, you know, we've jokingly said, you know, he embraced the philosophy D's get degrees. He was the kind of kid during high school or junior high, you know, it's just, you can have a great social life and make C's and be okay. Maybe throw in a few B's every now and then, but sporadically. And okay, why cramp your lifestyle to get A's and B's? And he didn't. Cramp his lifestyle, that is. Listen, I knew I was in trouble. True story, we moved to Dallas. Well, all of this is true. I wouldn't lie to you. So we moved to Dallas, and we knew where we were going to live, and we moved to this area, and we enrolled the kids in elementary school, and they're a grade apart. And we've been here maybe 2 weeks, and the school had some little program. I don't remember what it was, but Renee was in this little program. And so Rhonda and I and Ryan, and at the time Ryan was a huge Oakland Athletics fan. And so he had this Oakland A's hat that he wore all the time. And this program is going to be in the school cafeteria, which also serves as the auditorium. You've seen these. So picture this: as you walk in the door, you're walking in a side door, and the stage is to your left. To your right is all of the chairs, the folded chairs that are set up facing the stage. And so everybody that walks in this side door, you're basically walking in front of the entire crowd. And so everybody can see everybody coming into the cafeteria. We round the corner, we enter the door. Ryan's first, Rhonda's next. And the minute we round the corner, and all of the kids are seated up front, right? The teachers have got all of the kids, not the kids in the program necessarily, just all the kids sitting in the front. And immediately it's like cheers. And Norm, you hear in unison, you hear all these kids holler, "Ryan!" Now, we've been there like 2 weeks, and I looked at Rhonda and I immediately said, "We're in trouble. We're in big trouble." Okay, we kind of were, but not so much. Hey, I could tell you about the time that my phone rang and Rhonda said, "Well, they've got Ryan up in the principal's office." And I said, "Why?" "Well, seems like during PE or gym or whatever they had, during whatever recreational time they had, he broke out a whoopee cushion." Well, I just immediately started laughing. And then I got a little bit angry because I thought, yeah, what kind of an idiot gym teacher or PE teacher sends a kid to the principal's office for bringing a whoopee cushion? I mean, I could understand it if you're doing it during English class, but really during PE? So I just laughed and I said, "Well, just do whatever, you know, like I cared." Kind of funny. I could talk about maybe the time that my heart was almost broken when he told me that he was going to leave to move to Missouri. Yeah, I'd rather not. But I could also tell you about how my heart was mended when he told me he was moving back home. I might could tell you about how we felt when we saw him get his master's degree and how proud we were to see him excel in a career that I can tell you suits him perfectly. He's in school administration in a middle school. I don't know that that's where he's going to stay, but it's good for him right now. I think the kids love him. I think the parents love him. It's a good spot for him. I could tell you how it feels to hold his children. I mean, just think of that. You guys that don't know this yet, you guys that haven't experienced this yet, let me tell you. I can't properly describe how it feels to hold the children of your children. To hold his children like I once held him and his sister is just, it's incredible is what it is. It's just absolutely incredible. I could tell you how it feels to know that he's a phone call, a text, or now just a 2-mile ride away. Yo, I'm very blessed. Both of my kids live within 2 miles of me. We all live in the same community. I could tell you how it feels to worship at the same congregation. Even as kids and even now as adults, I could tell you how proud I was when I saw him get up and deliver his first sermon at church. Oh, yeah. There's a whole lot of things I could tell you about. And I mainly could tell you about how proud I am to be his dad or how proud I am to have him for a son. You can view that any way that you want. So today it's just, hey, it's simply happy birthday to my son, Ryan. A kid that in spite of his conehead start, I have loved him and I still love him very, very much. By the way, you can find him on his blog. He's not there much at ryancantrell.net. I'll put links to this in the show note. You can also connect with him if you choose. Over on LinkedIn. He's not a big social media guy. He's not a big online. Well, he's online in that he, you know, he'll watch YouTube videos and that kind of stuff, but this social media, not so much. He's not real given to Facebook and Twitter and all the stuff like Dad is. And if you want to see photographs of young Ryan and even grown up Ryan, just head over to the website. BulaNetwork.com, episode 181. Hey, and there's a special surprise for you over there. You'll see a picture of me holding both of my children when they were just kids, babies. I don't quite look the same. Well, some people say I kind of do, but there's one huge difference. If you want to see me with hair, go check out episode 181 at BulaNetwork.com. Okay, I know it had nothing to do with business, but you know what it did have to do? It did have to do with things that are infinitely more important than business. You've heard it said before, and it's true. Nobody on their deathbed says, man, I wish I would have spent more time at the office. No. No, you wish you would have spent more time with the people that are important to you. So when people say, you know, it's all about business, why? Why are you all about business? I can tell you why you're all about business. You're all about business because there are people in your life, like there are people in my life, that matter to you. And maybe you want success for them. Maybe you want to be able to put them through grad school. Maybe you want to be able to get them through college. Maybe you want to do this or that for them. I mean, there are all these drivers behind what we do. I hope in your life, I really do, I hope in your life that love for other people is a big driver behind it. I hope it's not just pure greed. That's a bad way to go. So today, if you've got children, hug them. If you don't, go hug your wife. Go hug your husband. Pay attention to the people that matter in your life because I've said to people before, you know, when people talk about time flies, man, no, it doesn't. Time does not fly. That just kind of is this illusion of time just kind of floating, soaring. We have hawks and things in this part of the country, and the winds, you know, you can look up in the sky about 200-300 feet, and you'll see these things just, they don't even move their wings. They're just, you know, they're just hitting the air just right and just kind of floating. Man, would that time would do that, but it doesn't. It races by like a rocket. If you go to the website and you look at that photograph of me, I remember being that guy, and man alive, listen, this is not me wishing I was back there. I'm very happy to be where I'm at. I'm very thankful to be where I'm at. And I wouldn't go back and do it again for all the tea in China. So there it is. Ryan Cantrell, 33 years old today, August 17th, 2013. Hey, subscribe to the newsletter. Just go over to the website and you will see a big button that says subscribe now. If you'll do that, I'll make sure that you're up to date on everything and anything going on here in the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is Bula, BULA, network.com. This is the Yellow Studio.